I am Frank Vaughn. It is March 27th, 2025. And with me today is a man by the name of Kelly Lorenz. He's a veteran. He's a father. He is a former corrections officer at the federal level. He's a crisis negotiator. Is there anything that you haven't done, Kelly?
Not recently, anyways. You know, I try to keep busy, but and occupied. But you know, it like you, Vaughn. We all decided to. I guess Frank's story, not Vaughn. That's the old military in me. We all just decided to find a voice. So that's all I'm doing right now.
Well, and so Kelly was an organizer with the PPC at some of the highest levels. Some called him second only to Maxime, and he's been there as long as I have, maybe longer. I don't actually know when you first got involved. Why don't you tell me when you got involved and what your motivation was?
Well, you know, I joined the PPC back in, I think it was late 2018. I wanted to get involved. I listened to the platform. Like everybody else, the platform resonated with me. I believed in that smaller government. I believed in that autonomous relationship with Ottawa. And so I decided to get involved. I reached out to the local association and basically asked, how do I get involved? And we went through the process, and originally I was looking to be the candidate in the Red Deer Mountain View area, but that position had already been taken. So at the time, headquarters asked me if I would just wait for a little bit and see what they could arrange. So I said, great. And then about a week or two later, I get a phone call from headquarters going, how would you like to take on Michelle Rempel? And from that point on, it was just, let's have some fun and let's get our message across. And obviously that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, but that's how it all started. And you know what? I've enjoyed every minute of it. I've put a lot of work into it. And as has so many other people like yourself and that's just how it began, and really I haven't stopped since then.
Yeah, it's funny because I remember you running against Michelle Rempel, and I was envious of your position because at that point I was already blocked by her for the debate we had on Twitter, but that's ancient history now. I know you worked very hard, and I know, let's get this out of the way first. Did I stage a coup and try to take over the PPC?
In no way did you try to stage a coup. I don't believe anybody staged a coup. The vote that went forward was presented to the membership. They had an option to vote either way, and they made that decision. I mean, just like yourself, Frank, I'm sure I've been compared to trying to stage a coup when I was leaving the PPC as well. All we're asking for is some accountability, and for me, it was about the rights for the membership. I felt that the membership needed to have a voice, and especially a voice on how the party was to move forward. So, no, at no point do I believe that you were staging a coup or anybody else. I think that's just a way of causing division.
And that vote that you're referring to, that opportunity for the members to voice their opinions, that happened after I left. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like I've been told I was named on a ballot and I lost a vote. And it's like, that just didn't happen. Like that literally did not happen.
Not that I can ever recall. And I've attended all the events. I was in Quebec when we held that first convention for the PPC, where again, I did some interviews with Maxime at that time. Nothing happened there. You were one of the MCs for that event. I attended the events in Toronto and Hamilton, and again, same thing. So I'm not entirely sure who started this rumor of a coup, but it couldn't be further from the truth.
Well, and you, and I just want to put this out there too, you've done a lot of volunteering for the PPC at your own expense, as did I, and as has hundreds of people. Like, this is a passion project for you. Is that fact-based?
You know what? It was. I mean, I was doing between 80 and 90 hours a week, all voluntary. And I was taking classes to learn how to better be a better leader within the role that I had. And I was reaching out to candidates right across the country. I still have candidates reaching out to me. I still have associations reaching out to me, asking me questions. How do we do this? Or how do we go about doing that? And I took a lot, like you, I took a lot of pride in what I did and what I still do. So, you know, at the end of the day, it was a lot of time and it was a lot of effort, but for me, I felt it was very much worth it.
So you mentioned member rights, which implies that there'd be some kind of basic constitution to go along with the PPC. Now, my memory, and you can correct me with your own memories or offer counterpoint if you want, but I recall even in late 2018 when the party was just being formed up, because I was there, I was one of the 250 original registering signatures that were submitted to Elections Canada, that the Constitution featured in our early conversations about the PPC, and then it just disappeared after the election. Now, the justification was in the lead up to the election in 2019 was we did not have time to do a founding convention, to do a constitution, because we had the election coming up and we had to be ready. And I thought that was justified. I thought that was completely and perfectly reasonable. But then after the election, the story kind of changed and the constitution disappeared from the conversation. Other than when I quit and left, I made it about the same issue that there were no member rights, and I quit and I left, and there was, and you were still there. So maybe you can provide context, because I've been told that I made this up, but HQ actually reached out to the EDAs and asked them to submit recommendations for a constitution. And there was a submission process and it carried on through the summer. And then it was memory hold by the fall. Now that's my recollection. Maybe you can attest to it or correct it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I remember people submitting articles for inclusion into a constitution and what that would look like. And I know a lot of people had a lot of interest in bringing governing documents forward and a constitution that would give the membership rights. Like you said, I left because I was looking still for those rights for members to have that voice. And one of the things I want people to understand is, especially when it comes to the Constitution, I wasn't leaving, and I never left because I wanted a Constitution to get rid of Max, which seems to be the belief surrounding headquarters. That for me, that wasn't the case. I left because I wanted our membership to have a voice in deciding what the mandate was, how we would move forward as a party, how we would grow as a party, and what that messaging would be. And obviously that still hasn't happened. I was told that there's some governing documents of sorts, which still falls along the same lines of what the EDA's responsibilities were way back when this first started. So there's still really nothing that gives the membership a voice in changing their mandates. And especially coming into this election right now, a clear message on what that mandate could be or should have been could have been settled prior to this election. And I think the PPC could have had a very strong foothold, especially here in the West. And again, I think that goes largely unheard, especially within the inner circle at headquarters.
Well, and it's interesting too, because when we founded the PPC, and I recently uploaded my debate footage from 2019 so that people could see what I was saying, because once again, I was told that I wasn't saying the things that I was saying. And I never really talked about the leader. I talked about a party for the people, a representative party, because the whole reason that we brought the PPC into existence was there was a feeling that the Conservative Party of Canada wasn't allowing its members their full constitutional rights on the convention floor to actually express themselves. And we wanted to do politics differently. We wanted to create a party of the people. So to me, having a constitution that the members voted on and having a vehicle for them to advance policy if they so chose was really a key thing. And what happened after the election of 2019 is, instead of it being a party of many, not a party of one, everything seemed to start to revolve around the personality of Max. And if you had questions about the PPC, you were attacking Bernier, you were undermining his leadership, and that's kind of how everything was framed. Is that fair? Is that your experience?
You know what? I think that's how it was after 2019. And then with the hard work of some of the candidates at that time, myself included, this is when Max brought forward the lieutenant role, where we would be that sort of that conduit or that spokesperson for certain areas. You had one for Atlantic Canada, you had one for Quebec specifically, then one for Ontario specifically, and then, of course, I had from Thunder Bay all the way to Vancouver Island and all of the Northwest Territories. So people were to come to us, and that was, I think that was a way of sort of showing that this wasn't a one-man role. One where right. Everybody could go to Max, right? And that was the answer, and I think it worked really, really well for a while, until you started, as for me as a lieutenant, I had people right across the country reaching out to me asking me questions, what's my rights, how do I do this, how do I do that, and whenever I brought that up again at the lieutenant's meeting, I was told outright that, you know, the only reason people want this is to get rid of Maxime. And again, like I said, this couldn't have been further from the truth at the time. This is not why I was bringing this forward. This was legitimate concerns from associations that I was hearing. So I think, yes, it was like that at the beginning because this was a new party, but the party grew, as you're well aware. In 2021, again, we grew even more, and I think that's in large part to the lieutenant's role and being that conduit for Maxime and being able to be accessible for not only the membership but for the candidates, for the associations, and really have a continuity in that messaging.
Yeah, it's so there's a key point there. You were responsible for basically half the country. So you were a very trusted person. Obviously, they vetted you and they trusted your word. The issue that you brought up about the only reason you would want a constitution is to take Max down highlights something that I've often said in a very basic way, that Maxime fears his own people or he fears his members. And it was my thinking in the beginning that if we had a constitution and we had a vehicle for a leadership change or whatever, if those things were granted to the membership that they could vote on policy and they could advance their ideas, that it would be the responsibility of lieutenants like yourself or individuals like me to make cases to the membership as to why leadership continuity mattered. I think we could have made convincing arguments and we didn't have to. The way that things are designed are so restrictive and so defensive that we could have opened up and we could have opened the doors and we could have made compelling arguments and we would have been able to keep the membership in line. That's my belief. And you can design a constitution if you're worried about large numbers of people coming in and usurping the party. You can design the constitution in a way that defends against that. But you mentioned 2021, the electoral success, 5% of the vote, which was a huge backing. It was very strong in your side of the country that you were looking after at the time. Yeah. But since then, in several by-elections, the PPC has lost vote share. Do you have any insight as to why that might have happened? I'm thinking specifically of, I believe, Portage Lisker, if I've got that right. Is that the right riding? But there were other by-elections that have ran since then. Do you have any insight as to why that might have happened?
You know what? I can only speak to the by-election that I ran in Calgary Heritage. This came shortly after the by-election that Maxime ran in Portage Lisker. And for me, it came down to messaging. I had a lot of conservative members, a lot of conservative peoples, even those from associations for the conservatives, come up to me and go, you know what, Kelly, if you were just the conservative candidate, I would vote for you right now because of how you come, how you present yourself, how you talk to the people. And the messaging is there. The messaging is right. People are looking at, you know, the platform. Yes, it makes sense for many Canadians. What that does for all Canadians, not just a select few. But for me, and I had this conversation with Max in Portes Lascar and on other occasions, that we needed to get away, or the PPC needed to get away from the rhetoric of fake conservatives. Everything that you heard was fake conservative this, fake conservative that. Well, if you're trying to attract voters, you're not going to do it that way. Quite honestly, you're just simply not. And for me, as somebody who was a conservative voter prior to the PPC, now you're calling me a fake conservative simply because I'm supporting this national party? Well, no, that's not really how it works. Like I said, if there was a constitution that allowed the membership to change the mandate, I think you would see a whole different sort of trajectory in the way the PPC was moving. As I said to you prior to us beginning this interview, there was a time when I presented to headquarters and Maxime at the time that, you know, the Western alienation, the sentiment there is very, very strong and is growing. And there's a large, very large group or chunk of the population that believe, especially here out west, that the federal election is over by the time it hits the Ontario-Manitoba border. I was told outright that that was a fallacy, that it was complete garbage and nobody believes that. Well, I think you're seeing now with the, you know, Alberta 51 and the 51st state and all of these things, that is a very real belief. It's a very real feeling. And had the PPC utilized that and taken advantage of that, because their base of their popularity was out west, I think they could have made great strides in just simply changing their messaging and how they were approaching this election.
It makes me wonder if it's like a lot of the HQ brain trust is based, it comes out of Quebec and maybe doesn't quite understand the actual sentiment here in the West, because if you want to make the argument that it's not real, that the elections are over by the time they hit the Manitoba border, you have to understand that belief is very strong out here, even if, and I'm not saying it's true or it's not true for the purposes of this conversation. I have my own opinions on that. But the fact is, it is a strong belief. And I believe no matter who wins this next federal election, we're coming into a unity crisis, because the conservatives and the liberals have both promised to deliver a trade war with the United States, which will be devastating to Alberta and Saskatchewan outside of any scale that it will be to the rest of the country. We will be the first over the wall to die, is how I've put it metaphorically. And Ottawa has indicated that they might, and I don't think in Polyev's defense, let's say, I've never heard him say that he would order the pipe shut off or the export stopped, but I have heard the liberals say that. And I can only imagine that if Ottawa says no more shipments of oil to the United States and no more shipments of potash, you got to cut it off, that would be the trigger for a very real, visceral national unity crisis. What do you think about that?
I think you're 100% right. And I think that this was an opportunity missed, again, like I said, by the PPC. Simple fact of the matter is, you know, if the PPC had focused, let's say, on Alberta and Saskatchewan, and Alberta and Saskatchewan, and I said this in 2021 as well, if Alberta and Saskatchewan would join together under a single party, much like the Bloc, and take the balance of power away in Ottawa, who cares what happens by the time it hits the Manitoba border? Because now you've got the balance of power being held in Alberta and Saskatchewan, and now that voice becomes a lot stronger. Because I can tell you for 100% certainty, you don't hear in Quebec, "Well, we just got to get rid of Trudeau." Or you don't hear in Quebec, "Don't split the vote." Why? Because you've got a Quebec specific party that's protecting the interests of Quebec and their sovereignty. And I think if the people of Alberta and Saskatchewan or the West as a whole, you know, if we stop complaining about or saying that we want to have what Quebec has, well, you know what? If that's what you want, then you've got to have the courage to make a change and make a difference. And how big of a difference would it be if Alberta and Saskatchewan held that balance of power in Ottawa?
I have long said that Quebec is it's the reference. They're the province that has done the Federation right. Now, they're also the Federation's voluntary participant. They did not sign on the way that the other provinces did. But the whole notion of this country, the way it's designed, is that the provinces are autonomous and sovereign, and they've delegated certain responsibilities to Ottawa. Now, Ottawa has eroded that sovereignty, but if there's enough political will, the provinces can take it back whenever they want. And Quebec, they get to do all kinds of stuff to protect their culture. They're basically an ethno state. They're looking to protect their culture and their ethnicity, and they get away with it. They use the notwithstanding clause under the Constitution, I think something like a dozen times. Nobody protests. They have maximized their advantage when it comes to equalization. So money is coming out of the West and it's being poured into the government coffers in Quebec. And I feel resentment for that, but I also see it as they're successful. They have successfully used this country almost the way it was designed. And for some reason, and this, I did this in a recent video where I was talking about Brad Wall. And once he left office as premier of Saskatchewan, he attended a meeting in Calgary, if my memory serves, it was the February of the following year, with business leaders, and they wanted to create, I might get this wrong, but it was like the Buffalo Awareness Project, but it was to advocate for Western values.
That's right.
But it was conditional. His involvement was conditional on them being dedicated to the Federation. And I've been wondering, and admittedly, I've only lived here going on 3 years now, but I've long shared the West's concern with the Federation, and I've known for years that I wanted to get here because this is where I belong. Why do you think, in light of 150 years of history, which I've highlighted in my videos, of Ottawa opposing Western sovereignty and power, the formation of the provinces, the way they laid out the railroad tracks, there's been a consistent fight for the West to try and assert itself against Ottawa. Why do you think the premiers are dedicated to the country in the way that they are, and why don't they copy the Quebec model?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't have that answer. All I can say is that for years and years and years, provincial leaders lack the backbone to stand up for their provinces, lack the backbone to stand up for the people of their provinces and really take a step forward and say enough to Ottawa. Equalization is a good example of that. Until recently, now you've got Danielle Smith in Alberta who is stepping up saying enough, we're not playing Ottawa's games anymore. I read an article this morning that she said that if the Liberals get in and they continue with their energy sector, ruining the energy sector in Alberta, that they were going to hold another panel to see what Albertans wanted to do with regards to a referendum. I don't think she needs that. I think she's got a very, very clear message from the people of Alberta right now. And Saskatchewan, really, for the Premier of Saskatchewan, that they've had enough. They've had enough of this games. There's no need for another panel to figure out what Albertans or the people of the West want. It's time to take a stand, and I think you're starting to see that backbone grow with the support of the people, and I think that's important.
Well, and I've often said on my channel, too, trying to highlight the very real fact that the Americans are, by and large, our geopolitical and best trading partners. They do have legitimate concerns with Canada, with our criminality problem, with our money laundering problem. mainstream politics doesn't seem to want to highlight that part of the role or that part of the story. And the fact that there's two sets of tariffs, one is reciprocal and the other is punitive. But this idea that the liberals, like the melting down of the NDP popular support is going to the liberals. And I don't think the polls, I don't think the liberals are polling as strong as the polls seem to indicate, but the Conservative Party and the liberals seem neck and neck all the same. Poly markets got them neck and neck. If the liberals win, I think you start to begin conversations about separation or some kind of association with the United States as a point of survival, because our money and our trade goes south, and it goes south and north. That's the flow. There's only one road and one rail link holding the country together. And Ottawa just has been deaf to what the West needs. It's not about want, it's about need. Now they're dressing themselves in the flag and they're saying we need pipelines and we need energy projects and we need this and that. But they've opposed it for a decade and longer. They've made us dependent on the United States. And now they want to take it away. Mm-hmm. And it seems hypocritical to the max.
You know what? It's 100% hypocritical. And, you know, like I said, was saying at the beginning of this interview, this was the opportunity for the West to come together under a party for some change that's going to give that, much like I said, much like the law, or it gives, but there's no options for that. And I think part of the problem is, especially with Ottawa, you see it all the time. They're promising Quebec this, they're promising Quebec that. The Quebec will never allow a pipeline to go through Quebec because...
They're still saying that.
They're still saying that.
In light of all this.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, my personal opinion of that, and yes, equalization comes down to the betterment of the country. It's supposed to spread the wealth. But simple fact of the matter is, if it were me, I'd be stopping equalization payments. Obviously, I can't do that. But what I would be doing, instead of sending all of our tax money to Ottawa, and then Ottawa taking what it wants, you know, equalization and everything else, and then giving the provinces back what they feel is all that's left, I would be doing exactly that, the opposite. I'd be keeping all of the taxes in, for example, Alberta, and then giving Ottawa, here, this is all we can afford to give you for equalization and other programs. This is all we can afford to give you, and take that control back. Especially, that's how the Constitution is meant to be. The provinces are supposed to collect the taxes and then send to Ottawa. Well, we're doing the exact opposite. So I think it's about getting back to how the Constitution reads, getting back that power back to the provinces, and actually creating that autonomous relationship with Ottawa that the Constitution is meant to reflect.
One of the things that I've highlighted here in Saskatchewan that the Saskatchewan Party has done is the Saskatchewan Revenue Act, which attempts to do just that, take back mm-hmm. power of tax collection and render it in, render it back to the provinces. And Saskatchewan in recent years has made a lot of different legislative moves that increase Saskatchewan's autonomy. Now, Scott Moe is not as vocal about a national unity problem as Danielle Smith is so far. I sometimes feel like we're dragging him kicking and screaming into the debate, because I think we're coming to a point where you can't play both sides of the fence. You're going to have to pick one side or the other. And America butters our bread, so we should probably be trying to have good relations with them. But all that being said, I'm a believer in short interviews that people actually watch. So I'm going to ask you two more questions. The first one is, how do you feel about the Conservative Party of Canada in this election? How do you feel about this election? What are your thoughts in general about what's going to happen as we head into April?
Well, as much as I hate to say it, you know, in talking to my people that have worked with me over the last number of years, this is what I believe is going to happen. I know Pierre is putting up a good fight. I know the numbers are supposed to be showing that he's going to win. And at this point for me right now, I really certainly hope that the Conservatives do win, because we need to have that change, of course, especially for the West. I personally see, unfortunately, another Liberal minority government, based off of the fact that Carney has basically stolen all of the talking points away from Pierre. And I see another minority government, and I see us back in the same position that we were in before.
Yeah, and I feel the best outcome would be a strong Conservative majority if we could actually get there, because whether you believe in the Conservative Party and believe they're genuine and that they want to do some of the, and maybe they don't go far enough, but they're a different beast than they were under Scheer and O'Toole. They're a bit stronger. And there's a, when it comes to criminal justice, when it comes to the orders in council, when it comes to guns, there are some key differences and there's some sameness that I don't like, but you almost need them in office to see if they'll try to keep their word and then expose the Senate, which is stacked against them, and expose the judiciary, which is stacked against them, and the public sector unions, and get that battle going so Canadians can see it. Or you want to see them completely flip-flop on their promises and back off on it in office, so that that big group of voters, that big right-wing vote, sees that the CPC is discredited. So whatever side of the fence you're on, as long as there's a cohesive, untried CPC, you want to give them a try, whether you want to see them fail or you want to see them succeed. So with that in mind, moving forward, let's pretend post-election, regardless of whether or not the Liberals or the Conservatives win, how do you see the future of the PPC? What would they have to do to kind of resurrect the hope that you had before you left?
For myself right now, if I was to have a perfect scenario for the PPC, just simply based off of their policy platforms, again, they would be that party that's not trying to form government. They're trying to obtain that balance of power and really elicit that change. That's what the NDP have done. So, you know, and this is what I'm talking about with a mandate. The PPC would be advantageous for them to come together and say, okay, look, it, we're not going to try and form government anymore. I don't care if we run a full slate of candidates across the country. We want to pick quality candidates. We want to pick certain areas, and we want to be able to achieve that balance of power and fight for this country and fight for the Western provinces. That's what I think needs to happen. Unfortunately, I don't believe it will.
Yeah, I remember feeling that way in 2019. When I had conversations with Maxime, I said, you know, you need to get back into Beauce. You need to win that riding. If we got to have that one seat in the House, that's so important. Spend the money there, spend the time there, because focusing our efforts on the areas where the vote would be efficient and actually getting representation, that's the first big foot in the door. And then from there, it's almost gravy. You'll grow as long as you have the right policies and the right messaging. Mm-hmm. But Kelly, thank you so much for coming on. And I really appreciate your time and your insight. You know, for me personally, you were one of the best, and I valued our interactions immensely. And I was so happy that we reconnected in recent times.
Thanks, Frank. I really appreciate you having me on. Again, you and I work very, very well together. I've had nothing but respect for you, and I look forward to hopefully you and I being able to do this again in the near future.
I look forward to that too, Kelly. Thank you very much.
Thanks, sir.
Did you know that I have a website? frankvaughn.ca, the ultimate repository for all of my work, and a backup location just in case the censors come for me again. And if you like the content, please consider using the donate link in one of the options available. There are no paywalls, there is no advertising, and there is no Patreon, and I intend to keep it that way. Thank you for your time and your consideration.